You believers that voted against the righteousness of God, a day of reckoning is coming. You made a covenant with death.
Hey, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, and it's another bloody Christmas special. We had one a couple of years ago, didn't we, which was all about the baby Jesus. And this year I thought we might have another one and look at duds. For every Jesus and Muhammad, there are a trillion bloody dud preachers or prophets or messiahs or whatever. Very few make it. Very, very few. So I thought we might have a look at some losers. Of course, we'll have a few America evangelicals dropping in here and there, like that guy right at the start. Great, wasn't he? Let's get on with it.
For every enemy that is aligned against you, let there be that we would strike the ground, for you will give us victory, God. I hear a sound of abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. I hear a sound of shouting and singing. I hear a sound of victory.
Yeah, White House chief witch doctor there, Paula White, with a little bit of help, putting in the good word to baby Jesus on behalf of King Donald. And Donaldism is a bit like a religion to me itself. That's how you explain whatever it was, 72 million people voting for the silly old cunt. But he is very tolerant. He demonstrates tolerance all the time. So long as you wear a red hat that says MAGA, then Donald is good with you and your sins. Whatever your sins are, you can be racist, misogynist, you can suggest that we should fuck children, whatever you want, Donald will listen and be understanding and sympathetic to your plight. He may privately go away and say, that guy is fucking nuts, but publicly, he will support you. You can do whatever you like. Donald's on your team, so long as you wear the red MAGA hat. On the other side, the Democrats, they're just so fucking judgmental, aren't they? You've got to get everything perfectly right, all the gender bullshit that's going on, and this-ism and that-ism, and, you know, they're up your ribs all the time. So, yeah, I can understand why people turn to the Church of Trump. But it's not about the Church of Trump. Maybe we should check in on Russia. Let's check the news. August 2020. When cops busted Siberia's answer to crisis this week, they discovered plenty of items unbecoming to a self-proclaimed son of God. Officers found weapons, money, and even adult toys in the sect leader's stash of worldly goods. The haul was uncovered at the cult's compound in Siberia's Krasnoyarsk region as contemporary messiah Sergei Torop was being arrested and charged with creating a religious association whose activities involved violence against citizens. Two other members of the sect were arrested alongside its founder on Tuesday on suspicion of causing serious harm to their followers. On top of the charges of establishing an illegal religious organization, they are also accused of causing harm to members' health and well-being. They're being held in the city of Novosibirsk, awaiting trial. During Tuesday's raid, police found a hoard of empty and full alcohol bottles, jewelry, weapons, adult toys, and a stash of money held in rubles, dollars, and euros. Given that the group espouses peace and love, the weaponry, which included a Sega semi-automatic rifle and several handguns, is particularly notable. Established in 1991, the movement forbids its adherents from smoking, drinking, or exchanging money, and they live as vegetarian subsistence farmers. The movement's creator, Torop, a former traffic policeman, believes he is the reincarnation of Jesus Christ and brands himself as Vizarion. Yeah.
You're fired. You're fired. You're fired. You're fired. You're fired. You're fired.
Let's try the year 1666. And 1,666 years after the false Jewish Messiah Jesus had turned up, the Jews have finally got the real one. Brilliant. Sabbatai Zevi, and he's about 40 at the moment. He's in Smyrna, that's in Turkey. He is expected to overthrow the Sultan any day now, and then he will ride on a dragon into Jerusalem. Once in Jerusalem, he will destroy all his enemies and become the king of the world. Yes, to be world domination for Sabbatai, we might need to get James Bond in. Now, Christians will start to get worried on two fronts. the Jews are getting uppity, saying, hey, Christians will soon be the masters and you can be our slaves. The other worry is that we've got those bloody Puritans now. We haven't packed them off to America yet, and they've been saying for a few years that 1666 will be the year. That end of days bullshit. We've got a Jew in London, and he is laying down serious cash at the betting shops that Sabbatai will be king of the world in 2 years. Sucker. In Amsterdam, Jews are dancing in the street. Now, the Jews usually don't come out because we usually hit them if they come out, but in Amsterdam, dancing in the street. Lots of Jewish traders have stopped trading. That's one of the key messages of Messiahs. Even Jesus said, hey, stop working. Don't worry about cash or real estate or anything. Kingdom of Heaven will be here any tick of the clock. Jewish behaviour is causing a bit of chaos. There is business to be had in digging up old dead Jews to be transported to Jerusalem. Their living descendants want them to get a nice surprise when God wakes them up any minute now. Now this is genuine. News in from Constantinople is that Sabbatai is actually already raising the dead. Jews are selling their houses, ready to head on over to Jerusalem. In Poland, the Jews are taken to staring at the sky because God will be sending a cloud to take them to heaven. They don't want to miss the cloud. Now, if you miss the cloud, who knows when the next one will be along. News will spread to Jews in Russia, and it's such a big deal that word gets all the way around to the New World. There will be a big backlash from American Christians, but nothing is stopping the Jews from all having great big grins on their faces. Even when Sabbatai is arrested, that won't put a dampener on things. No, Sabbatai will just make his chains dissolve and then walk straight through the locked doors. My dear listener, the sad news is that Sabbatai cannot dissolve chains or walk straight through locked doors or unlock doors. He can't go straight through doors. He has to open them like anybody else, and if you haven't got a key to a locked door, well, you're pretty fucked. A couple of months later, and the grins start to fade as word comes in confirming the non-escape of Sabbatai. Worse, of course. Of course it's going to be worse, my dear listener. The gossip magazines say he's converted to Islam. Nah, say the Jews, can't be true. But then comes a more detailed account that is pretty hard not to believe. Sabbatai was taken before Mehmet IV and given a choice. Convert to Islam, be impaled alive. Take your time. Okay, enough time. What do you reckon? Sabbatai tossed his Jewish cap on the ground, spat on it and said, bring on the turban, mate. Oh, we get it. The Jew Sabbatai is just testing our faith. Don't worry, Sabbatai. We still believe. Eventually, of course, they're going to have to face facts that Sabbatai hasn't overthrown the Sultan, won't be riding into Jerusalem on a dragon, and is not the king of the world. They need to have a good hard think about it. Is our expectation that a Messiah will turn up one day just bullshit, or will God eventually get around to sending us a magnificent leader one day? Yeah, of course he will. We just still need to believe. In 1666, the Jews had already been waiting for over 2,000 years since Nebuchadnezzar, nailed it, Nebuchadnezzar, since Nebuchadnezzar had taken people from Judah to Babylon. God said, don't worry, I'll send you a Messiah to get you out of exile, establish a Jewish nation and bring world peace. Since then, there's been tons of Jewish messiahs, but they've all fallen short of the mark. Yeah, our White House witch doctor is getting into a groove there, isn't she?
We had a list of pastors out there that was made headlines that was supporting Biden. They were pro-life pastors. We disagree on the pro-life or the pro-choice thing, but we're supporting Biden. Are you kidding me? Let me tell you something. Every Christian, every pastor out there that voted for Joe Biden last night, you have brought a curse upon yourself and your family, your children and your children's children down to the third and fourth generation, and you need to repent.
I'm sure they will, because we've seen this in history, haven't we? All you got to do is go to a Protestant, if you're a Catholic, and say, hey, you're doing Christianity the wrong way. And they will immediately convert over to your faith, won't they? Of course. First crack at a Messiah for the Jews was a guy who led them out of Babylon. God had said that was step one for the Messiah, lead the people out of Babylon. So they asked the guy, Zerubbabel, are you the Messiah, mate? Nah, he says, I'm just a bloke who can read Google Maps. A couple hundred years and in comes Alexander the Great, who is making a serious takeover bid for the whole world. So lots of Jews thought, is this the Messiah? Yeah, he looks like the Messiah. Then he died aged 33 and, he's not the Messiah. Judas Maccabeus belted up the Syrians, making him a good contender, but he was killed in battle in 161 BCE. That put him out. His brothers were also killed there. Another dud. In come the Romans and the Jews get Messiah fever. Simon, then Judas of Galilee, then some Egyptian guy who raised 30,000 guys, but they ran away when the first decent Roman outfit turned up. We got a guy, Theudas, who said he could divide the river Jordan. But before he divided the river, the Romans divided his head from his body. The only standout really is our baby Jesus. His disciple Peter said, mate, are you the Messiah? Jesus told him to shut up. Jesus probably knew it would be futile going up against the Romans. There was a possibility, and that was the Emperor Vespasian, but that may have been limited to our go-to Jewish historian, Josephus. For the Jews, Josephus was pretty much a traitor. By now, of course, there's a split. The Jews still waiting for the Messiah, while the minority, Christians, know that baby Jesus would be back within his generation, and this time he would give the Romans the utter boot. By 100 CE, the Christians worked out that, baby Jesus won't be back in his generation, so they just moved the date out to 1000. Yeah, must have been a cock-up at the decimal point or something, they say. 132, Simon Bar Kokhba rose up against the Romans. Rabbi Akiva will declare that this is the King Messiah, finally. And Simon will do very well for a while. Emperor Hadrian will send Julius Severus all the way from Britain. Simon had done well using guerrilla tactics, which was always tricky to combat, even for the Romans. Julius Severus, though, will use the counter tactic that does work. Just start taking villages with total death and destruction in mind. He will do that 985 times without getting bored at all. And on the way, 50 rebel strongholds will likewise be smashed to bits. 51st rebel stronghold is where Simon's hanging out, so that's it for the latest Messiah. Yet another dud. Jerusalem is named Aella Capitolina, and all Jews must go. For the Jews, this is possibly the biggest defeat in a very long line of very big defeats for God's chosen people. Not only have they not taken over the entire world, they've lost fucking Jerusalem. Talking about a Messiah will be very unfashionable. But you can't keep the buggers down forever and never ever, so long as there are Homo sapiens, we will never cease to have these fuckers crop up. 300 years later, we'll get a guy from Crete calling himself Moses. He's a flash in the pan. He'll tell his ragtag army that, just like his namesake, he can part the Red Sea. He can't. His followers will wander into the Red Sea while Moses stands nice and dry on the shore with his arms up in the air. Off they go, up to their waist, up to their shoulders, and that's where the smart ones will turn back. Others will be dragged under by the weight of their wet clothes and arms. By the time these guys, the survivors, got reorganised on the beach, Moses had vanished. There you go, there's his magic trick, he vanished. Let's have baby Jesus come back in 589, and he's a Frenchie. Dresses in animal skins and says he can heal the sick. He'll end up with 3,000 gullible followers and a chick calling herself Mary just to go with the whole thing. Off they go, telling any town they get to that they need to acknowledge our man is the baby Jesus. Sure, say the town's not wanting trouble. Off they go to La Poue, where Jesus will quarter his army in halls and churches and send off naked envoys. Yeah, naked envoys. I don't know if that's a good plan. But anyway, they're naked, they're envoys, and they're to announce his arrival to the bishop. Yeah, of course, says the bishop. Tell him I'm dying to meet the real fair dinkum Jesus. Look, I'll send a few of my top guys back with you to welcome and guide him to me. Off go the top guys, and they kneel as if to kiss the baby Jesus' feet. Then it's up with the daggers, and maybe Jesus is dead again. His army will disband, but St. Gregory of Tours assures us that his followers never stop believing. Yeah, a bit of Kenneth Copeland action there, just to change the pace up a bit with his big hit, Uncircumcised Philistine.
I don't care if you are pro-life. You cannot call yourself a Christian and call yourself a Republican or vote for Biden. You know what I mean? Or call yourself a Democrat, I mean. Or whatever it is. You call yourself a Democrat and a Christian, it doesn't matter. If you voted for the dark side, that's what you did. You are implementing the dark agenda, Satan's agenda.
I swear, you know, I used to watch Kenneth Copeland on a Sunday morning, Kenneth Copeland, Benny Hinn, and then the big one, Robert Shiller, in the Crystal Cathedral in New York. And, yeah, we'd have coffee and croissants and a good laugh at American televangelists. What a hoot. Now, on that little timeline I seem to be on, we're heading into a successful Messiah, Muhammad and the Rise of Islam. As we know from earlier episodes, one of the prophet's rules was, hey, treat Christians and Jews all right because we're all Abraham's kiddies. Messiahs have been turning up in times of social unrest and religious persecution. Now the top persecutor is the Christian church, with the burning of the heretics and the massacres of the heretics. So Muslims say, hey, if your Christian church wants to kill you, why not just move to our nice tropical climate instead? And you can do religion any way you want to. Nice bit of tolerance then, but that does not extend to armed insurrection. We get a Messiah named Cyrene in 720 with a bit of an army. He's cracked off with the strictness of rabbinical law and he's on his way towards Palestine. The Muslims will catch him and just hand him over to the rabbis for punishment. 20 years later and we'll find Adalbert, who isn't saying he's baby Jesus, just a saint. Mind you, he does have a personal letter from baby Jesus. It's just that nobody else can actually see it. It's a personal letter that's invisible to you, but he can see it. Yeah, seems fair. His followers will build a series of chapels for him, which he names St. Adalbert. All of them, no variation. The Pope will fail to capture him, but will excommunicate him, and Adalbert will die and be almost forgotten, except for you, my dear listener, but then you'll forget him in a little bit, won't you? 1144, and in comes Eudo de Stella, who'll get a ton of disciples in Brittany, form a church and appoint archbishops and bishops. Unlike baby Jesus, Eudo will say, sure, I'm the Son of God. His followers will ramp up, mainly because there's widespread famine in winter. But no miraculous loaves and fishes from Eudo. It's ravage the countryside and plunder wherever you are. Archbishop of Rouen will bust up the gang. Eudo can go to the slammer but not get any food. He can magic it for himself. Of course he can't, so he'll starve to death. His followers are told to recant and say that Eudo is not the Son of God, and most of them will. Those who fail the simple request can go to the bonfire. Now, one of Eudo's contemporaries will be Tantalum of Antwerp, who had been a diplomat, but when his boss, Count Robert of Flanders, died, he became a preacher of the Messiah variety. He's chatting to peasants, which really isn't fair game, because they'll listen to anyone or anything. Tantalum will be a smash hit, talking about the corruption of the church and the sinfulness of the priests, which means those priest sacraments don't really work. And then the big kicker, you shouldn't pay your tithes to the church. Bingo, and Tantalum is a total smash hit. Churches are empty. Tantalum, like any good Messiah, will, of course, live like a king. Magnificent dress, and he's always surrounded by 12 hard men who he calls disciples. He will get engaged to the Virgin Mary, she of the magical hymen. Oh, isn't that his mum? And even have a wedding with a statue to stand in for the real Mary. And then come the questions. Now, hey, what about Mary and Joseph? Did they fall out and get a divorce, or is this bigamy for Mary? Of course, the questions didn't come in. We all just accept it, and the wedding gifts did come rolling in. The church couldn't do much about Tantalum, given that he had so many followers and those 12 hard men disciples. A priest, though, will come in for a blessing and be allowed into the sacred presence. Priest has a knife which will be inserted into Tanslem, and he's off to heaven. His influence will continue until we get another Messiah to distract Tanslem's followers. We've been getting into these Christian Messiahs because of the Church itself. As soon as the Church became the official religion of the Roman Empire, it started acting way worse than its own persecutors had before then. The Church became a supreme dictator with common smelly types ordered to go to church on Sundays and provide free labour plus pay them a tax. It's easy to become disenchanted, but what can you do? The power of the Church was a bit like, say, the power of Stalinist Russia. No dissent tolerated. Along comes someone who can speak well and people will listen to any alternative. Lots of the Messiahs preached that your spirit was way more important than following laws, and while we all want to live in a society with law and order, those laws have to be just. The Church also had a history of magical humans, the saints, so for common smelly types, any guy who speaks well may be a saint or even the baby Jesus himself, who the Church constantly tells us is due any day. The Church also loves to tell us we have free will, so if we have free will, why not fucking use it and worship where we want to? And lastly, and I think this is still relevant today, the magic show can get a bit dull and boring. Where's the rock band? Entertainment right there, isn't it?
That will be done! That will be done! In every state, in the United States, in the name of Jesus, every city. And Lord, we don't just look to the presidency, but we're asking you to straighten out every Senate race, straighten out every House race, straighten out every governorship, straighten out every state legislature, straighten out every mayor election, straighten out every city council, straighten them out. Straighten them out. Straighten them out. Expose it all. Expose it all. Expose it all, Lord. And Lord, if it be your will and if it be necessary, another election, another voting day, whatever it takes under your kingdom, oh God.
If you'd let me get a word in, just calm down. There'll be another election. You just got to wait 4 years and it'll happen. We'll get to the brethren of the free spirit. A merchant noticed his missus was spending a lot of time at church. Yes. He followed her one day, and he goes to a cavern, and the service will start with a bit of communal dancing. That's good, isn't it?
Bow to your partner, your corner's off. Join hands in a circle and go round the hall.
No, not the do-si-do dancing. I don't know what sort of dancing. It doesn't say. Having done our turn on the dance floor, out comes the food and booze. Hey, says the merchant, no wonder this mob spends so much time at church. Oh, here comes the priest. Bet he'll go on and on and on about sin and bullshit. But no, it's we must become one with God. In comes a young hot chick to join him, and these two will get naked. The priest will lay the girl on the altar and say, this is the Virgin Mary and I am Jesus. Then hop right on top of the girl and get into the banging. The congregation will pair back up with their dancing partner and get right on into some happy worship. In and out, in and out, in and out, you know the drill. Sadly, our merchant won't be joining in, poor bugger, and his missus will cop a beating when she gets home. Still, that's not so bad when you think that others of that congregation are going to cop the burning. The free spirit movement was also about God is within us all, so why do we need a church? And hey, somebody else said that. Was it the baby Jesus? Yeah, it was, yeah. So the church for this mob is the Whore of Babylon, and sex is a great way to worship God because it brings divine illumination, and of course, church is now a great way to get laid, isn't it? Just for any gay listeners, the free spirit mob were okay with gay sex. In fact, any sex was good for them. Okay, let's quote. And if one brother desires to commit sodomy with a male, he should do so without let or hindrance, and without any feeling of sin, as otherwise he would not be a brother of the free mind. And when they go to confession and come together, he preaches to them, he takes the one who is most beautiful among them, and does her all according to his will. And they extinguish the light and fall upon one another, a man upon man and a woman upon woman, just as it comes about. Everyone must see with his own eyes how his wife or daughter is abused by others, for they assert that no one can commit sin below his girdle. Yeah, so that's their belief. And they've got some other curious doctrines in there, such as incest is permissible. And yeah, it always has to go a bit too far, doesn't it? Now, sexuality and messiahs just seem to go together. The church will constantly be onto these free spirits, but of course it's wildly bloody popular and will go on for ages. 1550 and Klaus Ludwig from Mauthausen in Germany will form a church where you were initiated by having sex with a stranger. Ludwig was another baby Jesus type come back and said the sacrament was actually another name for sex. Man was the bread without yeast and women were the slug of cheap house bread. When they fuck, it's Holy Communion and baby Jesus will be present because Klaus likes to watch. No such thing as a bastard kiddie from sexual communion. No, those kiddies are totally holy. And if you sign up today, you'll get our special offer. No member of the congregation can be killed. Oh, you're going to get immortality as well. And men, if you get horny for a particular girlie, you spot some girlie and you get the bloody hots for her, then you've just had a message from God. So go and tell her you just had a message from God and get stuck right in. And girls or blood friends, as these particular handmaidens were known, when that randy bloke comes for you, it's totally God's will that your legs will spread, even if you're married. We've got one big rule though, what goes on in fuck club stays in fuck club. Yeah, that's a tough rule for blokes who fancy certain married women around town, and the best way to fuck that hot wife is to convert the couple to the free spirits. Word gets out then, of course, and in come the authorities. Ludwig will hot-foot it out of there. Only three of the mob will be executed, proving the congregation can't be killed guarantee was worth doodly squat, with others renouncing and going back to be good Catholics. Sex with your missus only, with the lights out, in the missionary position, and try not to enjoy it, and only on non-saints days. Yeah, Paula White going through a metal phase there.
I really want to apologize, sincerely apologize, for missing the prophecy about Donald Trump. I prophesied that Donald Trump would be president 4 days after he declared himself a candidate, I should say, the first time. And that was obviously right. And then later on, I prophesied that he would not be impeached, and in fact, that he would win another term. And I was completely wrong. I take full responsibility for being wrong. There's no excuse for it. I think it doesn't make me a false prophet, but it does actually create a credibility gap.
Yep, it sure does. This gets me back to our Sabbatai Zevi, who's been the most successful Messiah for the Jews so far. He was a Turkish Jew who really took to the religion stuff, but even as a boy, this poor bugger was troubled. Brilliant student, so it was studies, prayers, sleep, with plenty of nightmares. Apart from the normal studies, he studied the Kabbalah, or the Hebrew mystical stuff, on his own. At 16, he started fasting, which will just go on, and start telling his parents that he will... Bloody email. Is it from God? Nah, it's not from God. Where was I? Yeah, he's going to tell his parents that he was the chosen one. He wasn't sure what God had chosen him for, but yeah, he'd been handpicked by God. His parents know what to do. Get him married and into the sack so we can find out all about girlish charms. He will marry, but refuse to do the banging, so his wife will divorce him. Parents bring on a new wife, same result. He's depressed and suicidal. Maybe he should give up the celibacy thing. Neighbours think that he's mad. We might just think that the chemicals in his brain weren't quite right. Let's get him to 22. He's 22 years old, and there's going to be a major world event. It's the Cossacks of the Ukraine. Now, these guys are hardcore cruel, and they are absolutely pissed off with Poland, who's running the place right now. Plus, we've got Poles who are Catholics, and Ukraine is Orthodox. So we hate each other over priests' haircuts and how we bake the magical bread. You may or may not recall that pretty much all of Europe persecuted the Jews when the plague hit. Jews copped the blame, but Poland said, no, that's all bullshit, and put out the Jews Welcome Here sign, and that's paid off for them. They've got good businessmen and top people to work in government. For the Cossacks then, the Jews support the Poles, and anyway, everyone hates the Jews, according to the Cossacks. Apart from killing pretty much all the Polish officials and priests, the Cossacks went hard on the Jews. Some were skinned alive, others buried alive. Let's mix it up with the removal of hands and feet. Pregnant women can be disemboweled, rape obviously. Killing of kiddies in front of their parents. You get the picture. Total cunty stuff. The score will be about 100,000 Jews dead, with a lot of those escaping the carnage fleeing to Turkey because of that Muslim policy. Treat Jews and Christians well, unlike Christians who say skin them alive, bury them alive, disembowel pregnant women and so on. Sabotai then got the details firsthand from Polish Jews who turned up in Turkey, and that traumatised the poor bugger. At least though he now knows why God picked him. He's the Messiah. Great! At the same time, we have the odd story that he started to smell nice. I don't know, maybe like a freshly baked scone or something. His doctor will confirm it's no trick. He smells nice, naturally. It must be that he's the Messiah, and we're actually smelling the genuine God-anointing stuff. Now, by the way, that massacre of the Jews occurred in 1648, the very year the Kabbalah said all dead Jews will be restored to life. Oh, hang on, no. The prophecy and the massacre don't seem to be the same thing. Anyway, another prophecy that's come and gone. Sabbatai will now cause a total scandal. He will stand up in the synagogue and say, Yahweh. Now, I'm sure you know, my dear listener, that Jews are not allowed to say the name of God out loud. But that will get him started on the follower's path. He said Yahweh out loud, and no bolt of lightning struck him, and he didn't turn into a pillar of salt or any of the usual God fuckery. 3 years later, and the non-Sabbatai following Jews, or maybe I should say the majority, will say, we've had enough of you, even if you do smell nice. Fuck off out of Smyrna. Off he goes with his merry band of followers to Greece. Oh, that's nice. He can meet the local Jews, kind of, because they're mainly Jews who'd been forced into Christianity by the Spanish, then fled because they felt guilty about it. And here comes a charismatic guy who says, it's all good. God is changing the Jewish religion, doing a bit of fine-tuning, and he's told me to put in the new laws. Laws like you can now say, Yahweh. Well, if he's just said Yahweh out loud and wasn't smited, then he must be the real deal. He will, of course, be booted out of Athens. But the final straw for the Jewish holy guys was an incident that happened at a dinner. Sabbatai got the holy scrolls and took them off to a marriage bed. Is he fucking our holy scrolls, I ask? And he's out. Off he goes to Constantinople, but he won't last long there, declaring that the Ten Commandments had been abolished. A Sufi mystic, though, will say, this guy's the real deal. God brought him love of a certain kind, and that looks like a bit of madness to us. In this state, he says astonishing things, like the Ten Commandments can be just forgotten. Once he returns to his natural state, he's shocked by what he had said and asked to be exorcised of the supernatural forces. Now, actually, his home ban has expired, so he can go back to Smyrna, where his followers will grow and support him in the style to which a chosen God should be kept. He will also be popular with the general population, being very generous with the cash that his followers gave him. Now, there's a hot Polish courtesan called Sarah in Italy, and she's also been doing a bit of the Messiah talk. Specifically, that she is destined to be the wife of the Messiah. So Sabbatai will decide to go for marriage number three. Some of his followers will go to Italy to get that hot chick, and the 38-year-old Messiah will now marry the 22-year-old Mrs. Messiah. Travel in paradise. There's a new prospective Messiah in town, Nathan Ashkenazi. That's an unfortunate name for a Jew. Similar to Sabbatai, he is a brilliant student of the rabbinic stuff and likes to fast until his brain starts to send him visions. He's got a following and a big reputation. Sadly, because this guy seems to be smart and have energy and purpose. So, sadly, one of his visions says, Sabbatai is the Messiah, not you. Oh, that's a shame, isn't it? Sabbatai was in Egypt when he heard about Nathan's vision, so he decided to pop in on him on his way home. At this stage, Sabbatai had actually given up the Messiah thing, saying he'd been cured. Perhaps it was the banging of the Sarah that stopped his depression. Nathan will convince him that, yes, he is the Messiah. Sabbatai, you are the Messiah. The pair will do the tour of the holy sites in Jerusalem, and then, bugger, Sabbatai's depression will return and he's off home. Nathan will go into a trance for a while, calling on various people to repent their sins. Then out comes the holy voice from his goblin. It says, Heed Sabbatai Zevi. Ooh, say all the rabbis. Sabbatai is the Messiah and will be the king of all Israel. Now Sabbatai will improve from his depression and visit Nathan, and that's it. Sabbatai is absolutely, totally convinced that, yes, he is definitely the Messiah. 3 days later, and Sabbatai will go into one of his states in the synagogue. He will stand unmoving and radiant for 3 hours and name 12 rabbis to represent the 12 tribes of Israel. Time for a tag back to Nathan, whose next vision is again Sabbatai as the Messiah, who will be rejected, then attacked by the children of Satan. I guess that's the Republican Party, or it might be the Democrats. A big day of religious fasting is approaching. Sabbatai will say, look, bit of a cock-up in the translations department. It was supposed to be a feast, not a fast. Well, we all like that. Who wouldn't rather have a feast than a fast? Then it's off with his followers to ride around the city 7 times, 7 being a magic number, then bless some forbidden kidney fat for his followers to eat. Oh, we can eat kidney fat now. Rabbis will boot him out again. Yeah, they don't like the kidney fat thing. Nathan, who can write a mean letter, is writing all over Europe to the Jewish communities announcing that we finally have the Messiah sent all the way from God, and it's great timing because the year is the magical 1666. Yeah, 1666. It's the millennium plus 666, which you know is the mark of the beast, and the Jews had not been able to celebrate the 1,000 years because they couldn't until all Jews were united in Palestine. And yeah, I know the Jews had their own calendar, so what the fuck do they care if the Christians call it 1666, but it's magic shit. Christians hearing about this Jewish Messiah are all, oh, it's the Messiah. So that's going to be the Armageddon. Rumours are out about huge troop movements in the Middle East. It's just rumours, my dear listener. Nothing else. For Sabbatai, it's off home to Smyrna to become the king of the world. Fulfill your destiny, Luke. Huge crowds, cheering, waving, that sort of stuff. Jews dancing in the streets, selling their houses, because they won't be needing them when the cloud comes down to take them away. No need to go to school, great. No need to learn a trade, no need to run your business. What next do you think, my dear listener? Mass hysteria is a good bet, so all sorts of people will start having visions and making prophecies, and it's the pillars of fire and stories of miracles and going off fucking everywhere. Orthodox rabbis aren't caught up in this. They will announce a big meeting and Sabbatai will order a day of prayer to coincide. Off he goes to the meeting, dressed like $1 million, with a big procession worthy of any pope. He said the forbidden name of God aloud, Yahweh, and blessed all believers with the royal scepter. He pronounced himself the Messiah and handed out royal titles to his top supporters, like, you, mate, you can be the King of Russia. You're the King of Tahiti. What if I could be the King of Australia? But, of course, Sabbatai will be the king of the world over them all. There will be a big old party with people pouring into Smyrna to pay homage to the great man. Off he goes to Constantinople with zero army. He doesn't need one. He's got God. Constantinople was a buzz. Not just the Jews. Christians are anticipating the happy event, Armageddon. Profiteers were writing stuff describing all sorts of miracles and prophecies to sell to the gullible public. God, though, is playing up or on holidays or something. Bad weather, so the voyage will take a month instead of 2 weeks. Meanwhile, the rabbis in Constantinople are off to see the Grand Vizier to say, hey, look, this guy is not the real deal Messiah, but he is the real deal troublemaker. Oh, echoes of baby Jesus. The last thing our churchy types of all persuasion want is a Messiah or the return of baby Jesus. They would be immediately out of a job. The vizier said, look, this guy's just a tick, so who cares? He's disrupting trade, say the rabbis. Oh, fuck that, said the vizier, so it ships out to intercept him and he can come to Constantinople in chains. Now, where is God when you really need him? The population is still a bit nuts with the prophecy and visions going on, and the Turks were really busy wanting to belt up the Venetians again, so it'll be, I'll just pop this guy in a nice remote slammer. But people still flock there wanting to see the Messiah. In fact, the movement is even growing and word is out that Nathan is on his way. In comes a Polish rabbi. Nice, sensible type. Nehemiah Cohen, who said, what about a bit of a theological debate? Sure, says Sabbatai, how can I lose? You do know I'm the Messiah, don't you? Now, we don't know what happened, but after 3 days, our sensible rabbi will storm out saying, I want to become a Muslim. Then he'll lay all sorts of charges against Sabbatai. Sexual debauchery, trampling on holy books, and intending to overthrow the state. That may have just been his way of tidying up Sabbatai. He's actually off home to Poland, and he's not going to give up Judaism. Off goes Sabbatai for his day in court, and we know it's convert to Islam or big pole up your ass, and Sabbatai is not going to give us a Rebecca Haynes moment of hooting and giggling. But the mob will think this has got to be it. This is when God will absolutely swing into action and come out with the good stuff like face-melting ray guns. Sabbatai will be rather disparaging about his followers, but take instant conversion. He's now Mehmet Effendi, there you go, and will be given a job as a gatekeeper at $50 a month. Shame, if he'd done a baby Jesus and gone through with an agonising death, then we might have churches with statues of a guy with a big old log up his ass, and instead of doing the sign of the cross, it'd be just one straight line for his followers, wouldn't it? Big win for Islam, then. The Jewish Messiah has converted. And, of course, the Muslims and Christians will be all laughing and pointing at the shame-faced Jews. The satirists will soon have drawings out of Sabbatai and Nathan as cheats and crooks, and the Jews can only agree. Once they stop and think it through, though, they'll be rather relieved. The Muslims could have treated this as a rebellion and gone all hard-assed on them, but it was just poke fun at the Jews' time. Then, of course, it's all Sabbatai pretended to convert to save his fellow Jews. Rumours around Europe varied. For some time, the real Sabbatai had just vanished into heaven, leaving a bag of meat on earth. Others say he didn't convert, with others saying he did convert, but only for the best of all motives. Well, what about poor old Nathan? His worldview has just been seriously rocked. Back to the Kabbalah for him, and just like the Christian magic book, you can find whatever you want in Jewish magical books. He will find an obscure passage that suggests the Messiah will become an apostate before he could fulfill his mission. There you go, says Nathan. The Messiah had to give up on Judaism. Situation normal, everyone. Don't panic. It's all going to happen in spring 1667. And of course it did not happen. Not even a comet or a bird flying the wrong way. No signs, no messiahs, no nothing. Nathan can't stop believing. He's in too deep. So it's the Messiah had to become an apostate, and it's all mysterious, but we'll understand it in the fullness of time. Yeah, there you go. God moves in mysterious ways. Nathan will remain a believer in Sabbatai for as long as he lives. Sabbatai will stay a Muslim, but continue to have attacks or whatever it is in his brain chemistry, and be on the Messiah and being eccentric. The faithful will continue to listen to him, and they are sure he is, in fact, the Messiah. 1671, and his Mrs. Sarah the courtesan will convert to Islam and divorce Sabbatai. He will betroth himself to a rabbi's daughter, Esther, but have another bout of depression and go back to Sarah. 1672, and in one of his fits, Sabbatai will blaspheme against Islam. Now, at any time since the prophet, blasphemy against Islam can get you killed. But Sabbatai will be exiled to Dulcino, former Yugoslavia, that area. Very nice. Some disciples will follow him, and he'll wander around looking for converts. Sarah will die in 1674, age 32, and Esther will die before she could get to Dulcigno. Sabbatai will say, no problem, send a corpse over, and I'll revive her. Oh dear, yeah, the family will just inter Esther. 1675, he'll marry Michael, daughter of a Greek scholar, and for some reason his followers will say, oh, this is it. It's all going to happen. But it isn't. But Sabbatai will give himself a promotion. He's no longer the Messiah. He's now Jehovah. The Turks are, by now, treating him as like a privileged nutter, a curiosity. Having become Jehovah, Sabbatai will die age 50. But I would think that's a blessed relief for the poor bugger. His believers will be confused and disoriented. Nathan will slide into depression, but then words out. Just like baby Jesus, Sabbatai popped back into existence just for a bit. Nathan can report that Sabbatai has conquered death, and Nathan will continue to preach whatever it was Sabbatai was preaching until he dies in 1680, aged 36.
You uncircumcised Philistine!
Hey, hey, ha ha, ho ho, Donald J. Trump, they can't beat my daddy!
Hear the sound of victory.
Hey, hey, that's not ho ho, Donald J. Trump.
You're gonna eat your own dung and drink your own urine.
I declare mercy. Saka, raka, saka. Noises, noises, noises. Pika, haka, aka, aka. Noises, noises. Hey, hey, ha ha, ho ho, Donald Trump.
We might be facing the pressure of eating our own dung and drinking our own urine.
Get this! You're gonna eat your own dung. Get this! You're gonna drink your own urine.
Hey, hey, ha ha, ho ho, Donald J. Trump, they can't beat my daddy. Hear the sound of victory.
The media said, what? The media said, Joe Biden's president. Ha ha ha, ha ha. Look at your name and say, ha ha. We win.
Yeah, those guys are worth every cent you put in the donation box, aren't they?
And I asked that you would smash the clay jar of deceit in America. Smash the clay jar of delusion in the United States of America. Smash the delusion, Father, of Joe Biden as our president. He is not. Yes. Would you take your iron rod and smash the strong delusion that Nancy Pelosi does have her House of Representatives? We don't know that. Smash it in Jesus' name. Smash, Lord, the takeover of the U.S. Senate by Chuck Schumer. Lord, smash it with your iron rod.
What's this attraction for evangelicals and King Donald the First? The thing is, they both kind of supply the same sort of thing, simplicity. I recall in the last UK elections, you had Jeremy Corbyn versus Bojo the Clown. And I was really hoping that Jeremy Corbyn would win because he'd come up with a complex set of policy that looked really fucking interesting. But what was happening in Britain at the time was this Brexit thing, which is hugely fucking complex. And Bojo just came out with, I'll get Brexit done. And that appealed to people. You don't have to think about Jeremy Corbyn's complex policies. You don't have to think about the enormous complexity of Brexit. Just vote for Uncle Bojo and he'll get it done. King Donald's the same sort of guy. Just three-word things. Lock her up. build the wall, and then it'll even stretch into four, make America great again. Factor three, drain the swamp. And I'm the guy who can do it for you. I'm the smartest guy on the planet. I can do all this shit for you. Yeah, just vote me in and send me money. It's the same with the people who support the evangelicals. They go along to church and all the answers are there to life's complexities. Who gives a fuck about astrophysics when the magic book clearly states God made the earth to be fixed? There you go. Who needs a fancy degree? You got crook? No problem. Just pray the cancer away. Who needs to talk to oncologists? These guys have got the answers to everything for you. It makes life so blessedly simple. Back to our messiahs, and what can we make of these guys? It needs some speculation, and you know I'm okay with a bit of speculation. Perhaps our messiah actually had moments of clarity where he thought, you know what, this religion stuff is bullshit. Can't say the name of God. What crap. I'm going to say it because those fucking rabbis think they're so good and so smart, but really they're just a bunch of stupid old men clinging on to some bullshit so they can get by. When Nietzsche declared God was dead, he liberated some people from a feeling of helplessness. Shit happens and it's God's will. But why the fuck did God allow that shit to happen? Why did he allow the Cossacks to come in and kill those Jews in very nasty ways? And perhaps more shit's coming my way. After all, I'm just a puppet of some supreme being who seems to be a bit fucking demented and more than just a bit nasty. Sabbatai, by becoming the Messiah, liberated himself from pretty much everyone, and even from God. Great life. But for me, you know, look, I find it hard to understand the belief thing. Now, for all I know, Sabbatai may have been God reincarnated on Earth. Maybe God came down to Earth in the form of Sabbatai to have a good look around and then said, yeah, no, I'm not quite ready. I'll go back and keep incubating for a while. I've got no evidence to say that that didn't happen. But even worse is when we do have all the evidence that says, yes, something isn't real, but we cling to it anyway.
Well, the point of this, of course, is to get to fair and accurate results because the election was stolen and President Trump won by a landslide. And how you're mischaracterizing this, I think that your viewers need to understand the truth of this.
And so we will finish up with a story from the good old USA. In the USA, outbreaks of religious fervour are about as regular as catching the flu. 1832, it will be the Great American Revival, with some nice new doctrines for us to play with. The most popular seems to have been perfectionism, where humans could polish up their moral efforts and become perfect while on Earth. Your moral effort, my dear listener, can be a bit tricky. It may directly conflict with your desire to have a nice bangin'. Perfectionists then demand total chastity, and of course I'm out, and I'm not going over to the Jews who will want their scalpel near my dick. New York was the capital of the revival and perfectionism, so we'll get some humans who will declare themselves saints. Our saints have a message from God, and if you can't guess what it is, then I'll be just a tiny bit disappointed. It is, of course, the end of days, just around the corner. Might even be next Tuesday. It might be. But so long as you are a chosen one, then it will be off to heaven for you anyway. Doesn't matter. Let's bring in a total super hottie, Lucina Afreville. What a terribly sexy name. Lucina reckons women should turn their backs on love and men should not try to tempt them into marriage. But spiritual love is fine and dandy. If you happen to bump into your soulmate, then you could look lovingly into each other's eyes. Maybe have the odd chaste kiss, but never ever do the hanky or the panky. And yeah, that includes no threesomes. The realisation that you were successfully defeating naughty Satan with his ideas about putting this bit into that bit and moving around would be totally sustaining and bring you some sort of spiritual ejaculation. Before you know it, you've got all these chaste couples looking lovingly into each other's eyes and waiting for that spiritual orgasm. If you happen to fail and fall into temptation with a bit of the in and out, then that proved you were not, in fact, spiritual partners. So you need to break up and continue your search for your soulmate. Our Lucina herself is in a spiritual relationship with one of the saints, preacher Reverend Jarvis Ryder. We'll get a newcomer to the religious revival, John Humphrey Noyes, son of a congressman and cousin to Rutherford B. Hayes, the 19th president of the USA. John will be fully into this, wanting to become a minister. His dad said, no, you need to get into politics. But the call of the religion is too strong, and he wants some of this perfectionism stuff while studying the theology bullshit at Yale. John will tell his professors that it's possible to become perfect through willpower. There's a big fat flaw in the plan, though. He's saying, no need for church or theologians. It's a DIY job, this becoming perfect, so the professors will boot him out of school. Off he goes to the perfectionist mob, and after a couple of years, he will tell them, he's cracked it. He's perfect. A bit like me, I suppose. How he can tell is that he lacked the feeling that he was a miserable sinner. He was cheerful and felt no pangs of conscience. Yeah, it does sound like me. He's perfect. I am too. 1833, and John will be reading the gospel of his namesake, St. John, who quotes baby Jesus saying, if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Hang on, says John. Hang on a tip. Is baby Jesus talking about me there? Has he been putting the second coming off till I arrived on the planet? Best to check further, though, so it'll be in Matthew. There be some standing here which shall not taste death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Oh, that's a bit different. Unless baby Jesus had made a mistake, which is impossible, baby Jesus can't make a mistake, then the second coming must have happened by the year 70. In that case, the sinners have been divided from the saved, therefore he's one of the saved, and that's why he felt no sense of sin. All good then, confirmation and solid proof that he's perfect. And also solid proof that baby Jesus turned up somewhere before the year 70, so the second coming's actually happened. Off he goes to Brimsfield, Massachusetts, to give a bit of a preach at the congregation of Reverend Simon Lovett. Guilt is unnecessary, is his theme, and the young chicks are digging it. They decide that he's their spiritual father and teacher. Here he is then, chatting up the chicky babes at the Reverend's house after the preacher following, and we're all going to have a sleepover. Once he's snug in bed, he'll be thinking about just how tempting those luscious girlies are, and rather than go for one or two or maybe even three of them, he's going to bolt, walking 60 miles home through the snow. What a dickhead. No, he's not like me at all. Two of those cheeky babes, having been deprived of the guilt-free naughtiness, will hop into Reverend Simon Lovelace's bed. We don't know what happened, but the gossip magazines will have it as bundling. Bundling, my dearest listener, is a threesome with your clothes on. Yeah, I don't recommend that. Reverend Lovett will now be known as the head of the bundling perfectionists. One of those two girlies, Mary Lincoln, was sent away, but some of the others decided to join her. Mary will have a rave declaring that the town would be consumed with fire. She'll rush off to a hill with a BFF, Flavilla Howard. What a name, Flavilla. With the girls tossing off their clothes to wait for Judgment Day. Good news, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. While waiting for the heavens to rain down fire, they prayed and prayed and prayed, and baby Jesus heard their prayers and Armageddon was averted. Ah, thank you, girls. Off they go home, just semi-naked now, and we have another scandal. Mary Lincoln can now find her soulmate, the Reverend Chauncey Dutton. Off they go, preaching perfectionism and telling everyone they live in the same purity as St. Paul. And what of a girlie it was that wandered around with St. Paul. I forget her name. The PR, though, is terrible, so they're going to have to marry. Now they can meet a nice new prophet, William Miller, who will tell us that it's to be the end of the world in 1843. It won't be. This guy, William Miller, shouldn't be in the podcast, given that it's about duds. He's kind of founded the Seventh-day Adventurers, so, yeah, he's pretty successful. Now, Lucinda Umfraville, if you remember her, she was our total super hottie, who was in the spiritual relationship with the Reverend Jarvis Ryder. A friend of hers will be living with the perfectionist Thomas Chapman and his totally hot wife. Lucina and Jarvis will go to visit the Chapmans, along with our Reverend Lovett, but Mr. Chapman wasn't home. Let's all kneel in prayer, and baby Jesus will have a chat to Jarvis, saying, "Hey, Jarvis, check out that Mrs. Chapman. What a total babe." So Jarvis will be saying, "Mrs. Chapman, you're my soulmate." Oh. As this is all just magical stuff, Mrs. Chapman will say, "Yep, sure, I feel the spiritual thingy too." Lucina will be consoled by Reverend Lovett. Now, Tom Chapman will come home to all this, and oddly enough, he will be an unhappy perfectionist. Tom happens to have a whip. Jarvis can now feel the nasty end of Tom's whip. But that's it. Marriage is over, and Mrs. Chapman will die soon after that. Back to our man, John Noyes, the president's cousin, the perfect one. He needs converts. You've got to have a disciple, haven't you? We had a guy, Mulaney, once. He called himself Beautiful All. That's what he called himself, Beautiful All. He advertised in a local paper for disciples. I don't know if he got any. Back to John Noyes. His first disciples will be his mum, two sisters and brother. Keep it in the family. He'll marry the daughter of the state governor, so there's another convert, and in come the husbands of his two sisters and the wife of his brother. Tidy little flock, but John is back to the thinking stuff. Okay, he says, the kingdom of heaven arrived about 70 CE when baby Jesus returned. So that means our idea of marriage is about 1800 years out of date. The magic book says that in heaven they neither marry nor are given in marriage. Lucina, Umfraville is wrong. Sex isn't gross and immoral. It's totally innocent and permissible. And don't forget, Johnny, it's good fun too. He's on about amativeness. That'll do, amativeness. And if that's a new word for you, well, it was for me, obviously, it means sex love, and is used mainly by academics like John to show off. He says that amativeness is starved in the boring old monogamous relationships which lead you to wanting to bang other people, and that in turn leads to poverty, poor taste, stinginess and jealousy. Yeah, don't see how it leads to poverty and stinginess. I can see how it leads to jealousy, but anyway, I'm not in his mind. Because we all actually live in the kingdom of heaven, it's here on earth, all men are married to all women. So, followers, when we meet them, then it's on. Full-on orgy. Get your whatever into wherever you like. In holy community, there is no more reason why sexual intercourse should be restrained by law than eating or drinking should be. And there is as little shame in one case as the other. Yeah, sex is just like eating and drinking. Just like breathing, really. John is so sure of this, he'll be publishing his doctrine of bang your little heart out in a magazine. I might have a go at defending this because his letter does say that banging around is not for everyone, just those like John who are in a state of affection. But typical of a theologian, his words are a bit obscure, so it's going to be outrage. His congregation, though, will grow, oddly enough, and a New York branch will open. Well, not a full-on branch, it's a couple, George Cragen and Mary Johnson Potty, who will marry George, and then their house will be the New York Center for Perfectionism. The boy visitors will all, oddly enough, be hanging around Hottie Mary. George will be worried by his feelings of selfishness for not sharing Mary with her boy fans. Time for George to check in with preacher and John Noyce disciple, Reverend Abram Smith. He's a charismatic as well as a perfect, and being those two things means he's going to put on a good magic show. Reverend Smith will invite George and Mary to move in with him. Abram Smith's missus did not like this one little bit, so Abram will give her the boot. And before you know it, Abram will decide that Mary is actually his spiritual wife and will invite her to his boudoir for private instruction. Poor old George will have to wrestle with the devil who has made him jealous. Oh dear. Before you know it, of course, Abram and Mary will be sprung doing the dirty deed. Abram will do the charismatic preachy stuff to try and convince George that it's all good, because he, Abram, and Mary were spiritual soulmates. "Yeah, nah," says George, "you're just a backdoor type, you arsehole." Abram says he'll go to chat with the master, John Noyes, about the whole thing. Noyes will confirm that Abram is a backdoor arsehole, and Abram will take his missus back, the one that he tossed out. George and Mary will move in with John Noyes, but sadly, Mary's decided that she and George are going to be in a spiritual relationship. That's the one we started with. So that means no more Mary Delights for George.
Oh, I know what that means. I smile, I said, you can't put that on me. And the worse it hurt, the bigger the my smile got. Elbow, I call you well. Back, I call you well. Knees, I call you well. Feet, I call you well. Kidneys, I call you well. Bladder, I call you well. Stomach, I call you well. Intestines, I call you well.
Ken Copeland getting super groovy there, wasn't he? Totally groovy. And who needs to go to a fucking university and study all that years for a medical degree when you can just say, yeah, everything's better? Back to John Noyce, the president's cousin. By now, his community have taken over 500 acres of land and are living communally. Oh, fuck, that's brave in the USA. This John Noyce, who had said it's all good to put your dick into whoever, was himself leading a monogamous life with his missus. Still, he's telling his followers to get out and have a good time. But that doctrine is problematic. What about pregnancies? John Noyce has the answer. Early withdrawal, coitus interruptus, getting off at Redfern. That's where the gentleman removes the penis from the vagina prior to ejaculation, and that is no fun at all. It is in the old book of magic, but that particular bit in the magic book was not sufficient for the Catholics to say it was all good. You might get some level of enjoyment, so yeah, no, we're not going to be having that. John Noyce thinks it's a good way to improve discipline. You need to concentrate and have well-developed self-control. That's cracked it for John and his missus, who will now start the banging of the other people. In fact, banging around will increase generally in the community. We like the idea that it isn't just good fun, it's an exercise to develop an iron will. And we may not even like it that much. That will definitely bring us closer to God. Sadly, though, the neighbours of the place will twig that banging is going on between married people who aren't married to each other. In come the authorities. John Noyce will be charged with adultery. Yeah, stupid government thought you could stop adultery by making it illegal. Yeah, you can't do that. It won't work. Rather than get too hot and sweaty, the acreage will be sold and we're all off to 23 acres in Oneida, New York State. This new community will follow John's latest idea, Bible communism. So it'll kick off with 87 people living in two log houses with an old sawmill on site. They will work from dawn to dusk, and in just 12 years they'll turn out their first profit. Who cares about hard work and 12 years of losses when you've got Bible communism? By now, we've got a new generation coming through hearing the holy message that, hey, why wait to lose your virginity when it's all good for you to toss it away the minute you feel like it? We still have rules, though. Sexual partners must both consent, agree with that, and the entire community have to give it the tick of approval. We kicked off with 87 people, and that will double within a year. Within 2 years, the log cabins are replaced by four timber houses, four stories high. A brick mansion will be built with a couple of wings. Yeah, more people coming on board. Now, this John Noyce guy has been rather different from the majority of messiahs in that he had no desire to give himself a harem or make sure he got all the hottest of the hot chicks. Maybe that's part of the long success he's had. Any problems in the group get sorted out by subgroups rather than Noyce dictating to people. Society in general at this time had sex as a totally taboo subject. We don't talk about it, let alone write about it, so we don't have that much in the way of details. On the plus side, books on cults or sex are usually written by unhappy ex-members, and there don't seem to be any of those for this mob. They did publish their own newsletter, so we know their mansion, for example, had a library with 5,000 books, including religious controversial stuff like Darwin and Huxley. They had an orchestra, performed plays, and enjoyed picnics. Their products will do very well and become associated with the word quality. Now, kiddies go to a communal nursery as soon as they're off the titty. Parents were discouraged from being possessive about their kiddies. These were allowed to wake up whenever they liked and were trained in a trade or craft. If they wanted to go to uni, then it's off you go, and a lot of those returned to work for the community. But it's a new generation, and my dear listener, believe it or not, new generations tend to reject the systems and beliefs of the old generation. Yeah, my generation did that. One of John Noyce's sons will be a doctor and agnostic. Lots of young people will be saying, hey, look, this banging around's just wrong. You should get married and live in a monogamous relationship. We want a normal family with our own kiddies living with us. And of course, the big kicker was that they had no experience in that religious revival that had happened way before they were born. Now, John Noyce will hit 60 and he wants to retire at another branch of the community at Wallingford, leaving this one in the care of his son, Theodore. Bad idea. Theodore lacked charisma and will want to implement some regimentation. That will cause a rebellion and John Noyce will have to come back. Then some young people will openly support Professor Mears of Hamilton Uni, who is the harshest critic of Bible communism. John just wants to go. He wants to retire. 23rd of June 1876, and just as he'd left the three hot chicks in the middle of the night as a young preacher, John will do a midnight runner. He won't stop until he gets to Niagara, where he'll spend the last 10 years of his life. He will leave a message behind, though. It's give up the banging around. Society will never accept it. The mob will heed the message. Well, he's their bloody messiah, isn't he? And we'll have mass marriages. 2 years later, and the communism thing will be abandoned, and we'll just turn into a joint stock company. 1886, and John Noyce will die, having left behind a successful business, but not a successful religion. Now, admit it, my dearest listener, when I said we'd have a tale about a USA messiah, you're expecting a messy tale that will have resulted in mass deaths. And we're getting there. But we're closing the chapter on this part of it about John Noyce, and he's pretty interesting to me, more so than some ego-driven nutter who just wants tons of sex, money, and to have so much power over his followers that they'll stupidly die for the silly fucker. Seems to me John Noyce fell for the old con that there are magical creatures who are interested in what happens in your bedroom. And by making sex bad, then basically what you're doing is making people focus on the bloody thing. This goes back to the total cock-up right at the start of human history. God said Adam and Eve, you can have anything in the garden except that there fruit from that there tree. What did Eve want? She wanted that fruit from the tree. Of course she did. She was told she couldn't have it. And the same thing happens with religion and sex. They say you can't have it, and then you start to focus on it. So for me, long story short, I think John Noyce finally figured that out, and that's why he did a runner right at the end. He thought, oh, fuck, I've just come up with some bullshit about baby Jesus came back in the year 70, and I'm now married to every woman in the world, so I can fuck every woman in the world. He just made that up to get his dick into people.
Strike and strike and strike and strike until you have victory. For every enemy that is aligned against you, let there be that we would strike the ground, for you will give us victory. I hear a sound of abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. The Lord has it.
Yeah, keep it up. I'm sure that God will overturn the election and put King Donald back. Now, remember Mary Lincoln and Chauncey Dutton, who became disciples of the preacher William Miller? Probably you don't, but anyway, we did cover that. This Miller guy was into the Book of Daniel, which is the most dubious bit of the most dubious magical book. His reading of Daniel gave him the real date of the end of the world. Yeah, the real and genuine date. 22nd of October, 1843, and prepare to meet your doom, my dear listener. Now, William Miller had a pretty decent congregation. 50,000 gullible Americans. And what are they about to do you think? If you came up with stuff like leave school, close businesses, sell houses, then you've been paying attention. Off we go up a hill in Massachusetts, which is the closest place to where the angels are going to turn up to destroy shit. One guy put on turkey wings and climbed a tree, ready to fly to heaven. Others carried an umbrella to see if they could float off like Mary Poppins. One woman tied some belongings to her so her luggage would arrive at the same time she did. The clock's ticking, and we get to midnight, and oh, fuck it. The world didn't end. One farmer had a son who'd convinced his dad to transfer the farm to him. Now that son's not going to give it back. It's about now that William will figure out, he used the Christian calendar instead of the Jewish calendar. Oh, I bet he feels silly. And I also bet he wishes he went to uni because he would find out all sorts of things about calendars and fuck-ups and how you calculate a date from the old book of magic. Well, yes, yes, I think you're going to need a supercomputer for that. Anyway, using the Christian calendar instead of the Jewish calendar threw everything out by exactly 1 year, exactly one. So it'll be 22nd of October 1844, not 1843. Ah, now we've explained that, we can all go back up the hill in October 1844, and then we can come down again when the world doesn't end, and it's another cock-up. William will have a good hard think, and say, oh, I see, it wasn't God's inspiration, it was my own eagerness. Yes, William, now just expand that, and you'll be going well. In comes William's close buddy and disciple, Hiram Edson, who will tell William that he, Hiram, had a vision in a cornfield. If you build it, they will come. No, not that vision. The vision that Hiram had in the cornfield was the one where 22nd of October 1844, Armageddon actually happened. It did. It happened. William had got the date right. He just had the wrong place. It all happened in heaven. Ah. Yeah, William won't believe this shit. That's even a bit much for him. And William can die 5 years later. Now, our visionary Hiram Edison, though, will preach this to people who are even more gullible than William was. And he's also going to kick in his new revelation that as Armageddon has happened, baby Jesus is right now, right this minute, sorting out the sinners from the saved in heaven and will be getting around to us on earth any tick of the clock. And we need to go back to the old book of magic with the Jewish silly food rules and the Sabbath is on Saturday. And yes, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the Seventh-day Adventists. Now, one other guy worth a mention is Victor Hutoff, who was another of William Miller's disciples and then went on to be a disciple of Hiram Edison and the Seventh-day Adventurers. He decided, though, that he was actually the reincarnation of King David, which was a bit nuts for Hiram Edison. So, like, we've got this William Miller, he's a bit much for any sane person, who then has a disciple, Hiram Edison, who is too much for bloody William Miller, and now Hiram's got a disciple, Victor, who is too much for Hiram. So these guys are just getting nuttier and nuttier. Victor will set up his own thing called the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas. So it's an offshoot of the Seventh-day Adventists. Fast forward to 1993, and we're investigating charges of child abuse at the Branch Davidians complex. Current Chief Nutter, David Koresh, had been told by God that he needed to father 24 kiddies, and he could marry multiple females, whether or not they are already married, and who cares about how old they are. Texas Child Protection Services were having difficulty with the case, so they called in the FBI. There'll be some negotiations, but it's a stalemate, so the FBI will get approval to just drive through the walls in one of those big old armoured thingies that American law forces have. Something will happen, and there will be a fire that will kill 79 people, including 21 kiddies. Something else will happen, and David Koresh will be shot by his offsider, who will then kill himself. Something else then happened, and that will see the bodies of a further 20 people, 5 kiddies included, who had been shot except for a 3-year-old who was stabbed in the chest. And there you go. I promised you I'd end my tale with death and misery, and I did.
If I flew commercial, I'd have to stop 65% of what I'm doing. That's really the main.
Isn't it true that you want to fly commercial so that you can fly in luxury? How much money did you pay for Tyler Perry's Gulfstream jet, for example?
Well, for example, that's really none of your business, but...
Isn't it the business of your donors?
Listen, I paid... You kind of caught me off guard here, okay.
Oh, yeah, Kenny Copeland, the gift that keeps on giving, but does this stuff translate to Australian?
And that's it. Dombarazandarakarasyando. Yeah, amen. God bless you guys.
Well, for me, my dear listener, it's just about time for little Henry Newman to turn up to the house for his very first Christmas with us. So I've got a baby to tickle. I hope you have a marvellous Christmas yourself. It's just a matter of what we go out with. We've been hearing different people's interpretations of our marvellous evangelist during the episode. And probably the main guy featuring there was a guy who calls himself WTF Bra. So we might go out with a bit of WTF Bra and, well, Ken Copeland, of course. Hope to see you next time. Bye.
Me man, let it say whatever it wants to say. I'm going to go to the next one.